I'm Alice Sharp. I'm the Director and Curator of Invisible Dust. Wanted to start off with to thank Simon and Wolfgang for inviting me to speak today. And it's great to be part of this discussion about the Dunstan space. I work with artists and scientists and creative technologists looking very much at what the last speaker was talking about, how we can find new ways of understanding climate change in our environment. I think it's really interesting, the Dunstan Space project. I have to say I wasn't aware of the actual building, even though I went to university in Newcastle. I didn't know about the Dunstan Space myself. And knowing that it's looking up the history, that it's the largest wooden structure in the UK, perhaps Europe, is just such an amazing sort of starting point. And I think also its relationship to the Industrial Revolution. And I think that, looking at a building that's had such an incredibly important role. I mean, everyone uses the term coals to Newcastle, you know, and actually that this whole sense of the coal mining that's gone on in the whole of the northeast was sort of channeling through down the town and then providing the whole of London with all of its fuel during the Industrial Revolution, I think is incredibly interesting, and interesting in terms of climate change. So, you know, we're now looking at an age which maybe is kind of moving from coal, hopefully, into something much more positive for the environment, but certainly coal at the moment is still providing a huge proportion of the UK's energy supply. In terms of the Dunstan Space, last night I talked to Martin from the Tyne and Wear Trust, and he was saying that Dunstan Space, they really want to make it into a landmark, something that's open to the public. At the moment, obviously, it's not safe, and they've raised some money from the Heritage Lottery Fund, which is fantastic. But also, it also needs a shift in people's perception, not only local people, but people maybe from who visit Newcastle, maybe who might want to go and visit the Dunstan Space. And I think one thing I think is very interesting with this event today is, you know, looking at whether this art can bring out new ideas and thoughts for people about the space. And I think that's a real interesting point. So in terms of what I was going to speak about today, I'm just going to briefly say a bit of what about my own practice as a curator. How I set up Invisible Dust, and a little short video about our projects, and then talk about the future, the things we're working on at the moment. And I thought I'd finish up with an extract of Rising, which is a piece that we did with Adam Chodzko here in Newcastle in September last year. So I hope that's all going to fit in the time. We'll see how we get on. I've cut out a few slides to make sure I'm on time, and I just wanted to start off my own practice. I've worked a lot in public art realm, and sort of biggest project I worked on, and obviously very monumental, was working on the fourth plinth. So I managed the fourth plinth when it was this incredible sort of shortlist of Anthony Gormley and Kashan Hubert, who were the two projects that were selected. But there were also some very interesting projects like Jeremy Deller's bombed out car from Baghdad, which, interesting enough, you know, Boris Johnson got elected, and funny enough, that wasn't chosen. So that was an interesting point when I was there. And also Bob and Roberta Smith came up with this fantastic windmill, which was solar powered for the fourth plinth, which personally I really loved, but unfortunately didn't get chosen. So that was a really interesting experience, being involved in something which was like a historic monument, but then providing contemporary art in a very big scale, and maybe something that can be learnt for the states as well. When I started working with artists and scientists, it was in 2008, and this piece is by Nick Crowe. Nick Crowe and I went to down to Whitstable, which is in the North Kent coastline, and there's an amazing place called The Street, where people can walk out into the sea, almost like sort of parting of the waves, and it's really loved by local people. And I said to Nick, it'd be great to do something about sea levels rising here. So he came up with this idea, which is the drowning of Tuvalu. And what he did is he made the landscapes of 9 islands of Tuvalu. The actual islands are in the Pacific. They have 10,000 people. They have their own flag, their own nation. And very, very unfortunately for them, they're only a meter above sea level. So they're coral atolls. And so really, at the moment, everybody's trying to get off the islands, trying to move to New Zealand and Australia. And, you know, their plight is really one of, you know, rising sea levels is really not going to do them any service whatsoever. And in terms of this piece, the idea was to invite people as the tide came in. So as the tide came in, the water went over the lips of these. And they might look very, very big. And they're probably about 4 meters. They echo the actual landscapes of the islands. But it was a very kind of playful piece of the water coming over. But then once the water did come over, you have this sense of loss because the islands become like shipwrecks. They're underneath the water. And so, again, by the end of the tide coming in, you can't see the island at all. So it was kind of like my sort of first, and as part of that, we got an advisor, Elko Raelin, from the National Oceanography down in Southampton, and he was our kind of main scientific advisor. So that was kind of the starting point for me working with artists and scientists. And so then I set up Invisible Dust in 2009, and with Invisible Dust, I started looking at air pollution. I met someone called Peter Brimacombe, who's at UEA, University of East Anglia down in Norwich, and I said to him, he said, I'm an air pollution scientist, and I said, how on earth do you look at air pollution? Because, you know, it's invisible, nobody can see it. If we all sat in our cars and we were surrounded by this red smoke, we'd all sort of think very differently, but because it disappears, you have this notion that, oh, it's okay carrying on driving. And so with Peter, he said, I measure dust through time. And I was like, it's a scientist. This sounds like a mad artist project, measuring dust. So I talked a lot more to him, and he was the person who kind of gave this idea about starting to look at visibility. And this is a picture of London when the Icelandic volcano was taking place, and all the planes were grounded, and everyone in West London was really happy because they got some sleep, because, you know, they weren't all crashing past them on the way down to Heathrow. But one of the things that I thought was really very noticeable was that the skies became this most beautiful blue colour, and some fantastic skies right across London because of, there was no pollution from the planes. And it made me think, well, if we're going to look at something like climate change, Malcolm was saying, you know, there's a problem with this whole kind of idea of catastrophe and what's going to happen in the future. Maybe artists have got something to offer which is much more broader than the science. Maybe the scientists need the artists to look at something in a humorous way. You know, maybe it's emotional, all those kind of things, rather than just maybe the kind of hard science. In fact, the sky's full of this, which is diesel particles. So my first few projects very much concentrated on air pollution. And unfortunately, air pollution, as well as being very, very bad for the environment, is incredibly bad for health and particularly children. So the first project we worked on was called Invisible Breath, and we worked with 20 schools in East London and with a scientist team from King's College London. And the scientists were actually in the sessions, were going and doing tests on the children to find out how their lungs were being affected by walking along busy streets on the way into school every day. Probably, understandably, what they found is that there's huge relationships between increased levels of asthma and respiratory problems. In America, they actually say that children's lungs are going to be... They've done studies where the children's lungs are smaller than comparative studies because of walking along busy streets when they're exposed to air pollution. So it's one of these issues which is growing. People are starting to know more about it, but at the moment it's really, I think, you know, the kind of public perception. I think it's one of these things where in the future people are going to say, how do we manage to live like that? So what we brought into this was something very personal, because when I think about environmental issues, you have this problem that it often seems like something that's far away from where the personal is. So obviously what happens with air pollution is you breathe it. It's about the body. And so what we did with the children was the artist came up with this fantastic idea, which was them making ink drawings with straws. And so we just put a bit of ink on the page, and the children blew the ink. And as you can see, it also looks like the lungs. So it also connected it up with the science really nicely. And so we've done a lot of projects where we kind of brought in that kind of thing, where we have the artist and the scientist working together. And we worked with Dryden Goodwin on this piece, which he drew his son, who was 5 years old, and he drew him 1,300 times, so a lot of very beautiful and very delicate drawings. And it was our kind of first really, really big project. We projected on top of Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital. St Thomas's opposite the House of Parliament, so we had to negotiate with the parliamentary authorities, and in fact we did a talk with Dryden in the House of Parliament, which was quite amazing thing to be looking out the House of Parliament as a projection opposite. So one of those. For Dryden, he's very much talking about the air pollution in terms of sustainability, and that notion of when you have a child, for example, and they take that first breath and you're feeling very sort of nervous about it. So he's trying to bring it very much back to the body, back to the kind of sensibility of the children. The other project I thought I'd just mention in terms of past projects, because it's a Newcastle project, is Marianne Neudecker. And I spoke at a symposium in September with her here, actually, which was really nice. And she did this amazing piece at the Royal Academy. I worked with this scientist, Alex Rogers, he's a marine biologist from Oxford University. And Alex does this incredible research where he goes into the deepest oceans of the world, places that humans have never been. And he's in a race against time, against the mining companies and the fishermen. And he's basically studying the biodiversity in these places. And he gave Mariel complete access to his footage. So they have these submersibles go over the ship, and then they film these incredible landscapes under the sea. And him and Mariel had long discussions about this, and she made this installation, which was at St. Thomas's Church during the British Science Festival last year. And in that, there was a series of videos throughout the church, and it was, you know, a couple of people I know, but it was Chastity here, went to it, and you know, it was a great experience for her to have her pieces shown there. So I'll just show you the video, which is about 5 minutes long, and then talk about my future projects. Given something to audiences to think about their relationship with the river and water in general.
Double Pendulum kind of looks at, you know, the politics of how breathing was affected by pollution. It looks at different lung capacities of male and female. It looks at how race impacts on how we breathe. And also, you know,
keep consuming all the time. That's what it's all about.
So that was great fun. And I did do the aerobics, actually, by the way. So just in case anybody... in fact, the climate scientists were all sitting down, but, you know, it was great fun. She actually got us all up, and no one actually knew until the actual event what she was exactly going to do. And, yeah, and Ellie got everybody kind of up and doing their stuff, which was great. So in terms of the future projects that I'm working on at the moment, I'm working on projects with museums. I started working in Manchester probably about 2 years ago, and developed the Ways of Seeing Climate Change event, which happened in October. And as part of that, I got very involved with the Manchester Museum, which has really kind of shown its collections according to environmental themes, and got incredible wealth of sort of scientific knowledge plus, you know, artefacts. And so, in fact, I should just go straight onto them. The OWL project are working in Manchester Museum, and you probably, most people know them from here because they did the Flow project during the Cultural Olympiad, which was along the Tyne and was a tidal mill. So they're going to be sort of based, well, they're already working with the curators in Manchester, and they'll be doing a piece this summer. So that should be a really exciting combination. And then here in Newcastle, I'm working with the Woodhorn Museum, which is a mining museum. Again, a nice connection with the Dunstan Estates. And Laura Harrington, who made a piece during the AB Festival last year about peat bogs, she's carrying on her research, and she's working with a geologist at Durham University. This picture is a really nice setup. She actually made her own cinema in a peat bog. She used an old shed and took a 16mm projector and actually projected in the middle of this incredible sort of wilderness. And she's going to be developing a new film, which we're going to show with Woodhorn. And we've been looking at spaces yesterday, really amazing mining spaces, which she wants to show it underground. So let's give you a flavour of what's to come on that one. And then Elizabeth Price, I've been working with... during the time she was here, actually, exhibited in terms of winning the Turner Prize, she started a space residency with me the year before. And on the right-hand side, the sphere that you can see there is actually the sun. She found an archive of photographic plates that scientists were taking each day from 1900 onwards. So she has this wonderful thing that the photographic plates also echo, you know, the history of photography as well as the history of the science of the sun. So it goes right through from, you know, black and white, colour, and now digital and HD. So we're working, she's made this piece which is called Sunlight, which was shown at the opening of the Focal Point Gallery in Southend, and we're working with the Royal Observatory and the National Maritime Museum to show it next year, and she's going to do two more parts to the trilogy. And then I'm working with some architects. I'm working with Exploration Architecture, a guy called Michael Paulin. Recommend you looking up. They've got an amazing exhibition at the Architectural Foundation, including this Biorock Pavilion, which grows under the water in the bottom left-hand corner. And then I thought I'd finish off with flooding, because flooding has obviously been the real discussion on the environment in the last period of time. I've been working with Eve Mosher probably for about a year, and Eve started out in New York, and she decided it was because of the dangers of flooding with climate change, she was going to chalk this line. So she got one of these chalkers that they use for football pitches, and she worked out with the scientific data where the level of flooding would go around the whole of Lower Manhattan, and she chalked probably, I think she did it for like 3 months, so it's a really, really long line going right through, and she started to talk to local people about the whole kind of issue of climate change. And of course, with Hurricane Sandy, that line, which always seems to her this kind of fictional line that she'd imagined, suddenly became true, and the water, you know, during Hurricane Sandy went in some cases right over the line. So we're working down in Bristol, we've been planning the project since last year, where we're going to do a new high water line, but this time we're working with local communities, and we're very much talking to local communities about what resilience themselves, how can they work together, what things will they need to sort of change in the way that they do things for the future, so that when the flooding will come, because Bristol is very susceptible to flooding because of being near the Bristol Channel, it has this thing where that if there's a lot of rainfall and there's a high tide, there's whole areas of Bristol that are going to flood. And I think with a lot of these things, it's not if it's going to flood, it's just when it's going to flood. But to work with the local people now, trying to build up methods, and then the local people themselves are going to chalk the line, which is going to hopefully be this summer, which is what we're planning for that project. So I wanted to finish off with the flooding. I've been following all the news on the flooding avidly, as you can imagine, because we'd already done a flooding project in September. And I guess the good thing about flooding is it's brought climate change right back up on the agenda again. But although within that, you know, I heard someone talking about, you know, when it's discussed on the news, it's not, this is going to be the weather of the future. They're just sort of talking about, you know, what's happening now. So that's kind of an interesting thing on the kind of, you know, comments in the media about these things. So I'm going to finish off with this piece, which was made by Adam Trotsko. It was shown in Newcastle in September 2013, and it was a co-commission with Great North Run Culture. We worked with Claire Walsh, who was from Water Resources Engineering Department of Newcastle University, and she's from the Tyndall Centre. And she and Adam discussed, hopefully a lot of people do remember, I'm sure most people kind of say, you know, where was I? It was the two monsoon when the water just came down in 2012, and suddenly the whole of Newcastle just stood, you know, to a standstill. And that was what inspired the whole piece. And he decided to kind of reimagine the Great North Run of the future. And this future would be where people had to wade and they had to, had to make their way. And so it's narrated by Gretchen, who you can see in that photograph. And it's really a kind of imagining of the future, a slightly sort of Blade Runner thing. So I'll just play a little bit of this before finishing.
Mm. Right now, I'm, where am I? I can't quite tell. It's on the top of a roof. The pale green roof of the Royal Infirmary. Ahead of me, I can see the little islands made by the tops of the Civic Center and the floating pontoon track stretching between them and Shieldfield House, heading, I guess, well, south for a bit over where the river used to be, then east out to the end to where the sea used to be. Now the sea is here. This was the route of the final run. I only started a day or so ago, but already the recently raised pontoon is partly submerged again. The water's been rising so fast. The run went through so many different phases. It was ritual and rehearsal, serious and kind of flamboyant, ecstatic, sort of carnivalesque for a few years. And then it calmed back down again when it became monthly. And then recently, for the last 2 years, I guess, it's been daily. Oh, and then as the water rose and parts of the run became submerged, the run had longer stretches of swimming. So, I mean, the whole way from Felling to Moncton was waded, and then soon after that it had to be swum. And I remember we used to swim part of it through the Dean Street multi-story car park. It's now deep below the surface, but in a few hundred yards I'll be roughly above where it was. Oh, that seems crazy. It's so dangerous. There were so many turns inside it. So lots of runners would enter at the same time. Poorly lit. Pockets of air in which you couldn't necessarily rely on being in the same place each time.
just finished there. If you want to listen to the whole piece, it's on our website. It's a podcast about 15 minutes long. It always puts everybody in a slightly dreamy state, so I don't know how we're all going to be with our workshops, but it was performed. These pictures are from the Tyneside Cinema, and we then performed it in Manchester, so I'm hoping to take it to more places. Thank you very much.